wash away some of bad smell. Grab rock first, most important. Then reach into puddles and gather all silver pieces. Throw in sack. They're more metal, but all rusted. Lose count after 100 silvers. But at least that much more again. A couple of silver rings and chains. Take them, too. 7 silvers look very strange. Weird face on them. Weird color. Put them in pouch for later. Go back to camp. Gather things. Put out fire. Lizzie going to have to navigate. Too much pain. Must concentrate on where feet go. One slip and smart orc might not get back up. Lizzie always tugging on clothes, steering orc here and there. She probably saved me 10 times, can't really know. Not smart now. Not well either. Life is Lizzie's now. Flying lizard true friend though. Shaman raise her good. If she ever has clutch of eggs, would love to raise baby Lizzie for own. Was past dawn when make back to tribe. Problem. Guards all around before ceremony. Blood on me, blood in black hair. They see if I go. I stop, crouched behind big rock. Lizzie look confused, then sees what I looking at. Flying lizard go over to guard and hisses. He look annoyed, but look much more annoyed when Lizzie steal his feathered headpiece. As she fly away with it, guards hoot and holler and chase. Let me limp into camp and into shaman's tent. Get yelled at by shaman for getting hurt. Lots of yelling. But can tell he happy to see me. He call on Kenvunk to start healing wounds and soon feel much better. Still ache like worst beating ever, but not going to die. Shaman say we'll take another day of Kenvunk healing for leg, but hands feel better and shoulder more okay now. Shaman fill tent with smoke again. Make sure I not cursed. Nothing I grab cursed. Only amulet glow. He peers at every coin and chain and ring. Make sure they safe. Lizzie come back, without stolen headpiece. She stare at all the shinies. Shaman say, you do good. You do real good. Kenvunk proud. I proud. Lizzie proud too. I grunt. You take stuff and hide. When chief see me, think I'm done for. Get food for village. Shaman wave hand in air. No, no. I got good plan for that. Smart plan. I show you soon. You'll see. I must not look like I believe, 'cause he scowl at me. I change subject. Half this yours anyways. Take it. Use to barter for food and stuff and things. Shaman shake head. All silver coins yours. Was point of this. If you force me, I take these rings and chains. Can trade for much food. Will really help tribe. I nod slowly. No point in argue with friend. Point at 7 metal chunks with ugly face. You take special coins, though. Don't know what is, anyway. He lift one up to show. These electrum. Part silver, part gold. Think from desert tribe somewhere? You keep. May need later. My turn to be hard head. You keep. If part gold could help huge next season. He sigh. 3 for village, 4 for you. No argue now. We hide this stuff in chest and get you ready for ceremony. Shaman have dumb plan. Okay, not dumb plan, but make me feel dumb. I dress in weird lizard skin robe, act as assistant. Ceremony always have people move slow, so nobody really notice how hurt I be. No need to cast more magic, 'cause I sitting by shaman all day and night. Sometimes I use fan on him. Or hand stuff and things from table, or fill cup, or hold book. Even quiet times where catch quick sleeps. Mostly, nobody see how hurt I be. After ceremony, we figure when try new smartening spell. 2 days after shaman's healing done on leg, after I sleep some. He get quiet invisible hands to cut up some silver too, so none wasted. Soon. We see if this worth time. Chapter 4. Happy birthday. I've realized that the orc calendar is good for seasonal planting, but not great for keeping track of annual events. So I adopted the kingdom calendar, used by both the elves and the humans. It's going to help me track dates and times much better. The kingdom calendar splits each season into three parts, early, mid, and late. Each part is split into 30 days. This is late summer of the year 2717, day 17. And because I can't be sure, but I want to celebrate anyway, I've declared this to be my birthday. I'm not really celebrating my natural birth, although it may have been around this time of year if Shaman remembers rightly. I'm celebrating my rebirth, or at least my mental rebirth. My name is Sorch Stonebender, and I'm a very smart orc. With the help of my friend Shaman, I've developed a new spell. I call it Augmented Intelligence. The amount of intelligence that is gained is greater than the old spell, and the amount taken back by the curse is far less by comparison. The augmentation lasts longer as well. Eventually, Shaman and I figured out how to make it work as part of my daily routine. It took several days of tinkering with my sleep patterns, using the old Enhance Intelligence spell to get me to the point where I could understand and cast the new spell, and figuring out how my amulet attuned to a spell for the day. But eventually, we did it. I was able to keep enough brain power overnight so that the first spell I cast in the morning was Augmented Intelligence. The amulet imprinted to it, and any additional castings of it were far more potent. That was the key. With the new spell imprinted to the amulet every day, I just had to cast it once more at night to keep the cycle going. Even without imprinting, casting the old spell over and over again to feed the voodoo engine was helping as well. All of those tiny intellect gains add up. I end up needing a lot of rest. A full night's sleep, my normal midday rest period when I'm working, and another rest period in the shaman's hut before I study the spellbook. We're all eating a little better due to Shaman's keen bargaining skills and contacts that he's maintained in certain non-orc communities. He deals with one orc sea captain in particular because he cheats us less than anyone else. The treasure that we shared from the silverfish's lair has been put to good use. The healthy resting patterns and better diet have really helped me to progress. There was a wonderful side effect of this healthy living. The bashers stopped coming around the voodoo engine. There were no more beatings. I had supposed that because we were healthy and well-fed, and because Shaman was helping to provide for the tribe's needs now, the smart orcs had less of a reason to be targets for angry warriors. But after thinking about it a while, I suspected that the real reason was my new confidence. I would look them in the eye when they passed. They knew that I wasn't afraid. Perhaps they suspected that my confidence was because I was more dangerous. Either way, the smart orcs worked free of bruising and terror, and the voodoo engine was humming along better than ever. But was I really more dangerous? I think so. I've done the calculations. I can cast 3 non-intelligence spells without risking the new routine, or 5 spells if I'm willing to fall back to the old intellect enhancement for at least a couple of days. Any more than that would be a permanent drain. To be honest, that isn't much of a problem right now. Because I have to dedicate mental energy to an augmentation every night, I can only realistically prepare a couple of the basic spells and a couple of the new advanced spells. It isn't a question of intelligence, it's simply a matter of rote memorization and experience. I'll need to master new techniques and find new mentors in order to do more than that. But now, the good news. I've come to understand 3 new spells from Shaman's book. Again, I didn't bother with any spells with material components that I had no access to. The new levitation spell didn't require any materials at all. I couldn't fly around like Lizzie, but she was fascinated as I was able to slowly drift around the tent, easily able to reach the top of the central support pole. Spider's web, sometimes just called web in the notes, required a little bit of natural webbing from a spider. It produced a field of strong, sticky strands that could slow or stop even a strong orc for some time. Acid Bolt was quite an eye-opener. You needed the innards of a beetle, but the effect was potent. The bolt of acid it shot out ate through wood almost instantly. It was shockingly destructive. Without a doubt, this was the most potent offensive spell in my collection. I now keep two sets of notes. One set is still in very simple terms, just in case I can't keep up this new routine and I need to start over. But the other set of notes is required to grasp the more complex thoughts and rituals that need to be understood to take on advanced magical spells. I copied all of my spells and all of the simple and advanced notes into a new book gifted to me by Shaman. This one was bound with fresh lizard hide, waterproofed, and made rugged for travel. He said that he would keep my simple notes so that he could teach others if he could, but he didn't want to hold me back. I was grateful for the book, and for the chance to reorganize my thoughts. I told him that I would maintain both books for the moment. My writing had become faster, more precise. It took me less time to keep two sets of notes than it had just one set when I was only working with the copper version of the enhancement spell. Shaman was excited when I demonstrated my new powers and new knowledge to him. But every word I spoke seemed to make him sadder and sadder. For days, I was worried. Was I disappointing him? Was the result of our experiments not what he expected? Then I realized I didn't sound like an orc anymore. I was sounding more like the humans that I met in the hills. He might feel like he's losing his friend. So the next time we met, I made a conscious effort to talk like we would in the old days. I walked into Shaman's tent after finishing work. Shaman said, "Oi, you gots to finish simple note, then plan next thing." I replied, "No worry, me get done." Shaman's eyes narrowed. He asks, sharply, "You screw up smartness spell? You miss morning?" I shook my head quickly. No, I did all. The older orc practically snarled, "Stop. You no do that. No act dumb." Lizzie quietly flapped her way out into the night air. She wanted no part of this argument. I stammered, "Thought that you be more comfortable if..." My old friend cut me off. "Thought wrong. You talk dumb mean you think me dumb. Maybe not get every word out of smart mouth, but follow good enough." I hung my head. "But whenever I talk, it seems to make you sad. You were never sad when we used to talk. I don't want to lose our friendship." All of the anger drained from Shaman's face. He took a deep breath and let it out in a long sigh.
No. Not you make sad. Well, not smartness make sad. Sit. Me explain."
I sat down quietly. Shaman started pacing at the side of my writing desk.
"All this, new book for you, extra shinies for you, more train for you, all this because we know what come next."
I looked up at Shaman, confused. "Well, I hope that my new magic will help on the hunts. I can help feed the village and stuff and things." The older orc shook his head.
"No, bone's been cast. Kenvunk agree. You gotta go."
Those simple words shocked me. I stood up so fast my chair fell over. "Go? Go where?" Shaman's voice remained calm, if a bit sad.
"Away. Me no, Kenvunk no, even Lizzie no. You always last to know, 'cause you got big heart. Wanna help all. You smart, but trust too much. That dumb."
"I don't understand, Shaman. Why would I leave? We did all this, we risked our lives, and now you're saying that I can't help around here anymore?" Shaman pointed his rattle at me.
"That what I say. You no get it. Bruisers talk. Say you dangerous 'cause you no afraid no more. Chief listen, he watch. He see threat in you. He not know all thing, but he no have to. You stay, they kill you in sleep. Maybe not this season, but next, or next after.
A chill went up my spine. I hadn't even considered that.
Just because they sensed that I might be more powerful, they would kill me rather than let me help the village?
My old friend nodded.
Yeah, 'cause you get too strong, chief afraid you challenge, and if find out you have stuff and things, kill you to take stuff and give things to bashers. Chief not good guy, not like us. I was stunned into silence. Of course I knew that the warriors were willing to hurt me, but the threat of death was just now sinking in.
Shaman continued,
So all this so you can go. That why you keep silver and some fancy coin and new book. Me keep old book and notes, and we see if any new smart orcs do what you do. I keep eye out for more amulet, but you go.
I must have sounded miserable when I asked, Where can I possibly go? Shaman rolled his eyes.
Anywhere with more magic. Anywhere with smart folk. You go, you learn. You free now. What you call job? Feed engine? That not job. That being slave. Not for you no more. Kenvunk say go. I say go. Lizzie, no care.
My shoulders were shaking. I didn't realize that I was crying until Shaman reached out to rub at my tears with a calloused gray-green thumb.
Dare, dare. You don't know how proud me is. Chest gonna burst, that's how proud. Best student ever. No, you know worship Kenvunk, not really. But he proud too. He say you got good chance. He say he sorry for what he say to Elf Girl. You go tell her dat for him.
I rubbed my face.
Okay.
I took a deep breath to stop the tears.
Okay. When do I go?
Shaman shrugged.
Tonight, me guess. Now me tell you, you terrible liar. No hide this from bashers for long. You sleep, I pack your stuff. Got copper from human, got silver from fish. I pack dat and other stuff and things you need. Burned wood, guts, webs, all we gather. New book, I keep old. Food and water. Pouches and sacks. Big cloak to hide ugly face. Soft gloves to hide ugly hands. And rock.
I nodded.
Thank you, old friend.
I laid down to rest. It was dreamless sleep. And so it was that in late summer of the year 2717, on day 17, I was to be reborn. I said my goodbyes to Shaman and to Lizzie. I hoisted my pack, and just before midnight, I set out into the hills alone. I drew the hood of my cloak up over my ugly face and did my best to become one with the night. Happy birthday, Sorch Stonebender.
Chapter 5. The merchant's quarter of Limpt was bustling. It was the first day of early fall, and many religions would celebrate the turning of the seasons over the course of the next few days. The presence of someone in a full gray cloak with the hood drawn up was nothing new or unusual. The fact that this person might be wearing cloth gloves simply indicated that they were clergy, or perhaps upper class. So I was able to pass through the streets of Limpt unmolested and unquestioned. As I walked along, I proceeded to look over the shop signs, each hanging plank of wood cast a long shadow in the afternoon sun. Public workers were starting to sweep the cobblestone, preparing the streets for dinner services hosted at the many inns scattered around the area. I was careful not to jostle anyone, and any vendor or passerby who spoke to me received a quiet but polite nod. Finally, I came across the sign I was looking for. The polished oak plaque simply read, The Magic Shop. Not that I could read common too well. Rather, I had someone write it down for me at one of the few stops along the way that took my money and didn't ask questions. The pattern of squiggles seemed to match almost perfectly. I walked into the decently sized establishment. The area in front of the counter had a dozen racks and displays. Behind protective glass was a selection of scrolls and wands. Common herbs and components were in sealed jars along the left wall. Behind the counter, a small selection of necklaces, amulets, and charms could be seen in individual display cases. Stairs in the northeast corner led up to what one could assume was a living area, as it was marked private. Stairs in the southeast corner led down to an area marked stock. There was a group of three older ladies haggling with the tall proprietor. They were trying to talk him down to 25 pieces of gold for a particular scroll, but he was holding firm at 30.
"Really, ladies, if you consider that once one of you learns the spell, you can teach the others, it really is a steal. The flat mule spell can help you to carry heavy loads with perfect control, without the need to feed, shelter, or care for an animal. Even the most novice caster can maintain the flat mule for an hour, and masters can keep it conjured for the better part of a day."
I turned my gaze to the smaller shopkeep. He was up on a step stool, restocking herbs. I could tell he was trying to hide a smile. The human's hands deftly placed pre-measured bundles of the plant-based spell components into the correct jar, before sealing it tightly. Apparently, the ladies were sold. Money changed hands, the scroll was handed over, and the chatty women exited the store in a rather excited state. Rick called over to Will.
"I told you that the name Flat Mule would catch on."
Will laughed.
"It's an awful name. I think the elves call it something boring, like a disc of transport. Still, better to be memorable than efficient."
He gestured over at me.
"You have a customer?"
Rick strode towards me, wearing his best winning smile.
"Welcome to the magic shop. I'm Richard. Were you looking for any sweet holy Vinara?"
Will turned his head sharply to see what had startled his partner so much. What he saw made him tumble gracelessly from the step stool and land square on his ass. I had thrown my hood back to show off my orcish features and the green-tinted skin of my face. My cloak was hanging open to show them the amulet that had played such a major role in changing my life. "Hello, my human friends. It is good to see you again. Are you all right, Will?" The smaller man scrambled to his feet.
"Fine, I'm fine. Rick, I'm just going to close the curtains and lock the door."
Rick nodded, mutely. His mouth was open and working, but he couldn't seem to get his voice to cooperate. I murmured, "If I've caught you at a bad time, or if this is an unwelcome visit, I can head off. I just wanted to..." "You had mentioned the name of your shop, and that I should stop by sometime." The tall man finally found words.
"No, of course not. Sort, you look amazing. It's particularly shocking to see you, but not at all unwelcome."
Having flipped the open sign to closed and drawn the red velvet curtains shut in the shop's front windows, Will hurried over to stand by Rick's side.
"Sorch, this is astounding. I think we can safely say that we're astounded. There's no other word for it. Are you hungry? We live upstairs. We have a small pantry. I could use a snack."
I had to admit, I'm starving. I ran out of supplies a few days ago, and foraging has been slim. I was going to ask if I could give you some money and you could help me to resupply. Most of the merchants that I've come across outside of town avoid my patronage. Rick smiled.
"Come on up and share some bread and cheese with us. You need to tell us everything. And then, of course, we'll be happy to help you get whatever you need in town."
Although we had only met once, a brief but intense encounter, the three of us were already conversing like old friends. It had something to do with saving their lives, I'm sure. I explained how the amulet had allowed me to gain a foothold on my intellect, how Shaman had encouraged me to develop a better intelligence enhancement spell. At their prompting, I related most of the details of the adventures that ensued. "So now I'm using my new augmented intelligence spell to attune the amulet. I normally top off with a couple of the old enhance intelligence spells after my midday rest, and just before bed I cast another augmented intelligence. That lets me use my supply of copper and silver efficiently, and gives me the freedom to use three or four spells during the day without much risk. It depends on how difficult the spells are, and nutrition and rest. Lots of factors. When I finished, I looked at each of the two humans. It didn't seem like either of them fully believed what they were hearing. Not that they thought I was lying, they just found the tale quite foreign, and were struggling to understand my own intelligence being used as a resource like that. Guys, it's all right, you can say whatever you're thinking. I won't be upset. Will swallowed a chunk of bread and cheese just as I tore into mine. He said,
Well, I don't know what I can say. Off the top of my head, I think you've done an amazing job discovering how all of this works. I've never heard of an orc overcoming the curse of Amisutef, even temporarily. That you've not only managed it, but the fact that you're growing as a spellcaster under those restrictions is quite a feat.
Rick nodded in agreement.
And as I mentioned, we owe you more than just that amulet for saving us. I think that we can help you to expand your current spell selection. Heck, I've never even heard of anyone performing an advanced version of Enhance Intelligence. You can likely trade that knowledge for a host of low-level spells. In fact, allow us to be the first to make that offer.
I chewed the sharp cheddar and spiced flatbread slowly. It was an interesting concept. Well, how about I give you a full inventory of the spells that I know, and you can tell me what the gaps are in my knowledge. Is that fair? They agreed that this was a good starting point. I listed off the magics that I had learned. Enhanced Intelligence, Force Bolt, Noon Sunlight, Fan of Frost, Flaming Sword, Augmented Intelligence, Levitation, Spider's Web, and Acid Bolt. Rick scratched his chin.
Well, that's a very eclectic collection, Sorch. It skips right over the spells that just about every student knows. Detect Magic, which is the arcane version of what your friend Shaman did to make your amulet glow. Identify, which is quite costly to cast, but is generally seen as an apprentice's graduation test. And then a smattering of physical manipulations, so that even if they flunk out, they've learned something useful. As an example, Rope Trick, to animate a length of rope. Invisible Servant, which does manual labor, similar to the work done by your arcane siphon, but more light duty.
Will chimed in.
Flat Mule, of course.
This earned him a glare from Rick. The smaller human just grinned and continued.
Of all of the ones that we mentioned, Detect Magic is the one you'll want to learn right away. Knowing whether or not a seemingly mundane item is magical can save your life. We have that one in our books, or plenty of copies on scrolls in the shop if you needed to travel immediately. Identify you'll want to learn, but it consumes a fairly pricey gem when done correctly, so we can hold off on that until you're well established.
Rick added,
I'm going to suggest that you learn Invisible Shield as well. You're already well into combat magic, and this is one of the most basic defensive spells. And, Will, you know Silence, right?
Will nodded.
I do. Silence is particularly good for you if you're going up against other mages. If you and your typical elven or human mage are both in a cone of silence, your more impressive physique might give you the advantage.
I finished my latest helping of bread and cheese. So you'll teach me these, and I'll share my augmented intelligence ritual. Is that fair? Rick laughed a little bit.
More than fair. Sort, if we were to do tutoring for a spell so obscure or so rare that it isn't common knowledge at the university, we would make a hefty profit. If it really is unique and nobody else has ever crafted a similar spell, you deserve more than a handful of common magic.
The smaller human was nodding his agreement.
If we were to reteach your spell or sell anything related to it, such as scrolls, you would deserve an equal share of the profits. We would insist. Eventually, we should be able to have a scroll made of the spell, which you could use in an emergency if you needed to restart the process.
I smiled. Kind of you. That's fine with me. I paused to sip fruit juice from the carved wooden cup that they had provided. I have something to ask you in addition to helping me to resupply, taking advantage of your knowledge, and getting help when looking for a residence nearby. I'm going to need a steady supply of silver and copper, which means employment or adventure. Could you tell me what my options are? The tall man considered.
For you, adventure is easier than employment, unless you want to work on a ship. The only orcs around Limpt are at the docks, and they rarely do more than pick up shipments or supplies and then leave again. He turned to Will and murmured, "A houseboat of some kind. That's actually an idea." Will hummed. "The sort. I can look into it as a longer-term solution. Leave it with me." Rick turned back to me. "If you could buy or rent a houseboat and berth for it at the docks, it wouldn't look out of the ordinary at all unless you attracted a lot of attention for some reason. Then you could travel up and down the coast as you needed. But back to your question. Adventure, exploration. They can keep you fed and discovering new things. We would be happy to have you along for our next expedition. I believe that is around 30 days away. We'll get the exact date from the caravan company within 2 weeks. Until then, there's the bounty board." Will winced. "Bounties are dangerous, but they can be valuable. We started off doing bounties when the shop wasn't realistically going to pay for itself and money was more important than additional stock. There are certain inns that adventurers frequent. We could make some introductions to the proprietors. They generally involve getting rid of a threat to the public safety, finding someone who went missing and the like. You know, protection provided, mystery solved." I tapped my fingers on the table. "I'd appreciate the introduction. Tonight I can make camp a short distance outside of town. I don't want my presence to be disruptive. Then you can tell me where you would like to meet, and we can arrange everything in a logical order." Will snorted. "Don't be silly. You're staying here tonight." I blinked. "I am?" Rick looked a bit surprised, too, but stayed quiet. Will smiled broadly. "Of course you are. We have a cot downstairs for when we're out of town and we have someone else watching the shop. Even someone of your mass shouldn't break it." Rick ahad. "True. I had forgotten about that. Of course, stay the night, sort. We still have a lot of questions. If you answer them, we'll share some of Will's famed scrambled eggs with rabbit mince in the morning." We chatted late into the night. Education was a hot topic. They would send word to the Arcane University and ask for an audience with the headmaster to discuss the possibility of formal education. Will warned me that such an application was likely not to be answered for a while. Then there would be a few magical aptitude tests, and even if I passed all of the tests at my entrance exams, the next academic year didn't start for months. I was intrigued by the option, and told them to go ahead. When everyone agreed that it was late and rest was the best option, I headed down to the storeroom. While my human friends were apologetic that I would be staying in a storeroom, I don't think they fully grasped the vast divide between our worlds. The storeroom was fully enclosed and watertight. Up until this point, the best place I've ever slept was in Shaman's tent, which was still drafty and leaked in the rain. The storeroom's wide cot was 3 layers of suspended cloth and leather on a strong wooden frame, without a doubt the most comfortable thing I've ever seen. Normally, I'd be sleeping on a pile of crushed reeds covered by an old pelt. Finally, I'd be sleeping through the night. No sneaking off to try to find food or being woken by a rough kick to the ribs from an angry basher high on effin leaves. My human friends had no idea that this would be the best night's sleep of my entire life. I let the conversational topics of the night filter through my mind. Discussing the possibility of such things as houseboats and tutoring was an amusing distraction, but I knew the reality of the situation. I was an orc in a city of humans. I would need to tread with care and avoid drawing any attention to myself. There would be prejudice, and given some of the warlike actions of my people in the past, I could hardly blame the townsfolk if they saw an orc as something savage and uncivilized. For the moment, stealth was a better option than being brash. And yet I couldn't allow prejudice to hold me back. While being subtle around the humans, I still need to achieve my goals. So it would help if those goals were a bit more well-defined. I sat down at the inventory desk, took up the quill and ink, and jotted down what I wanted to achieve now that I had opportunities and resources close at hand.
The amount of copper and silver I went through every week equated to about 2 pieces of gold in the local currency. Even living off the land, this was the bare minimum amount of resources I needed to maintain my intelligence. If I wanted to maintain my city-based lifestyle and use my time learning new magic, I would need money for food, renting lodging out near the docks from someone who wouldn't ask questions, common spell components, and the like. That would bring my expenses up to 5 gold pieces a week. As long as I'm meeting those basic expenses, I want to set aside a quarter of whatever I'm making to send back to Shaman. Even a handful of gold every month would mean the world to my people. The difference between the tribe dwindling away and the tribe thriving might be my contributions. To have some measure of security, particularly if I go the adventuring route and need to store the spoils, renting a cottage outside of town would be around 20 gold every week, with all of my other expenses. If I'm to get the kind of privacy and security that I need in the long term, a houseboat isn't the worst of ideas. It can move if I need to move. There would be almost no reason for people to visit, allowing aggressive trapping and warding should the situation warrant it. From what Will and Rick were saying, costs would range from 2,000 gold pieces to 5,000 gold pieces. The higher the cost, the larger and more seaworthy the boat would be. Of course, the larger the boat, the higher the dock fees. I paused. My other goals had an uncertain price tag, but best to write them down anyway. Get an education. Not just magical, but historical, geographical, and general. My world up until this point was all swamps and hills. I need to broaden my mind to stuff and things other than magic and common vocabulary. Reading and writing in common, rather than just being familiar with the spoken version, would be something that I needed to polish over the next few weeks. Explore. I have questions about the world that simple instruction and reading will not answer. I want to feel the stinging cold in the high mountains. I want to see the ruins of the ancient desert city of Poth. I want to experience the majesty of the great elven cities, built entirely with magic and divine power. I want to visit the northern orc tribes, known as the Great Collective. Grow emotionally. I've only had a single true friend my entire life. As I learn and explore, I want to experience the kind of social interaction that a world both civilized and wild can provide. Finished, I left the page on the desk so that the ink would properly set and dry. I would slide it into the front of my spellbook in the morning so that I could have a constant reminder of why I was doing what I was doing. I vowed to myself that when I learned more of the written language, I would translate that list from Orcish into Common on the reverse side of the page. After I cast my nightly augmentation, I laid down on the storeroom cot. I was asleep within minutes. That night, my dream was one that I had not experienced in quite some time. I was surrounded by snow-capped mountains. The air on my face was quite cold, but I wasn't shivering. I had the distinct sensation of being surrounded by soft white fur. I also had a sense of purpose. I was there to protect my friends and loved ones. No matter how physically vivid the dream was, that was the real shock to my senses. I had friends and loved ones. I needed them, and they needed me. But it was something more as well. I needed the world, and the world needed me. My tears of joy froze, even as they were falling from my cheeks. Chapter 6. I woke suddenly to the sound of clinking jars. Will's head poked out from behind one of the dusty shelves.
Sorry, Sort. I was going to let you sleep in a bit longer, but I needed some time for the eggs and we're out of it upstairs. Rick is heating some water for a bath. It should be ready by the time we're done eating. See you up there shortly.
The short human headed back up the stairs with a generous bundle of herbs. What's a bath? I asked myself, puzzled. Later that morning, I discovered that I loved baths. Will's cooking was quite clever. The nearby butcher ground up the small portions of leftover rabbit meat and sold it inexpensively. Will would fry off the minced meat and use the grease to cook scrambled chicken eggs. As they cooked, he would add the meat back in, as well as herbs and any leftover cheese they had laying around. He served the dish with a few buttered bread crusts that had a nice crunch when you bit into them. I can honestly say it was one of the most delicious meals I've ever tasted. Civilization can produce wonderful things sometimes. While Will prepared the shop for opening, Rick and I headed across town. We were both dressed in full traveling gear, hooded cloaks, gloves, and boots. Rick's outfit was forest green, whereas I favored a dark gray. The destination was a hole-in-the-wall inn on the south side of town called the Deviated Course. It rode right on the edge of where the docks met the slums. The Deviated Course was an adventurer's inn. The bouncers were big and silent. The bartender was big and loud, and the owner was nowhere to be seen unless there was trouble. Two long tables were in the center of the main room, while shadowy booths lined the walls. At this time of the morning, with most of the rowdy crowd sleeping off the after-effects of their ale in the common room upstairs, only a couple of booths had occupants. Rick led me over to the job posting board. The writing was in common, which I had yet to master. My human friend scanned over the postings as the bartender eyed the both of us. Rick explained, "You're looking for jobs that aren't attractive to a group because the pay is too low to split, but risky enough for a single adventurer so that not anyone off the street could do it. The price should reflect that." "Ah, here we are." He read the details and frowned. The bartender called out,
"You need an abacus there, Professor?"
Rick continued to read, but answered without looking up.
"Shut up, Joel."
Joel turned his gaze and his smirk to me. He explained,
"I know the professor here since his very first caravan guard job. He pissed himself, breeches to boots. Got the job done in the end, though, so we let him live."
The bartender flashed a wicked, half-toothless smile. Rick retorted,
"If you didn't water down the beer so much, you wouldn't have so many pissing incidents, I imagine."
Joel's smile faded to a scowl.
"Bah."
He went back to cleaning the bar with a dirty rag. I just shook my head. My human friend turned back to me and summarized what he had read.
"There are two options, and I don't like either of them, but I won't tell you why until you've heard the offers."
He tapped one of the postings and explained,
"This one is for a night guard. A warehouse on the docks is expecting trouble this weekend. They don't say which one or what kind of trouble. It does have the seal of the mayor on it, so at least the cargo is legal, or legal enough. Anyway, they want an extra body to dissuade a nighttime raid. 2 nights, 50 pieces of gold.
I was already shaking my head. "Pass. For all we know, it could be overwhelming odds. There's no clearly defined threat, just mitigation against the unknown. You could get ambushed by all sorts of stuff and things."
Rick agreed. "Exactly what I was thinking."
He shifted his finger to the other posting.
"This one is about cattle rustling. According to this, an unknown creature is stealing sheep, particularly young adults. One of the farmers putting up the bounty said that it walked on 2 legs, but was able to carry off a sheep under 1 arm. It strikes on well-lit nights when the moon is close to full. They never found any parts or a blood trail, so it is assumed that the thing's lair is some distance away. They want it killed and proof of death. 40 gold and anything you find in its possession is yours."
I nodded. "Yes, that's the one. I'll take that." Rick looked a little bit taken aback by how certain I was.
"Sort, they don't know what this thing is. It could be a genuine lycanthrope, a werebear or some such creature. All they know is that it's massively strong with a taste for meat."
I shrugged. "But there is no deadline, no penalty for failure, yes?"
The human nodded. "Yes, true, and it's a legitimate offer, bearing the mayor's seal. But it's also non-exclusive, meaning whoever accomplishes the task first gets the reward."
I laughed. "That's fine. It means I can scout it out, assess the situation, the opponent, and the danger. And if I feel it's too much for me, then I can pull out." Rick considered.
"All right. You've thought this through, I see."
He called over to Joel.
My friend will make his mark on number 41.
The big man grunted and gestured me over. Come on, then. Make your mark on the line, thumbprint next to that.
I was already stepping over to sign my name, but I hesitated when he mentioned a thumbprint. I glanced at Rick, who was already looking back at me. Surprisingly, it was the bartender who broke the sudden silence with uncharacteristically quiet words meant only for our ears.
You can take off the glove for this, Sir Orc. Got a good buddy of your type, boat captain named Bluebriar. Brings me shipments of rum. What he done drink first?
I nodded and quickly slipped off the glove covering my right hand. I took up quill and ink and signed my name in Orcish. I then allowed a couple of drops of ink from the tip of the quill to spatter to the parchment. I pressed my thumb into the black liquid to leave my print. Joel handed me the bar rag, and I wiped my thumb off. I wasn't sure that my digit was any cleaner afterwards, given the state of the cloth. Quickly, I slipped my glove back on in order to hide my green flesh once again. The bartender, back to his normally loud timbre, explained why he needed the thumbprint.
Thanks for that. Any mission with the mayor's seal needs proper tracking. Disputes go all the way up to the magistrate, you know. Anyways, happy hunting.
We hurried out of the tavern and started to make our way back to the merchant's quarter. I mentioned, I used one on the journey over the hills, but I have 3 coins left that may give me enough supplies for the trip. Assuming Electrum is worth a bit more than half a gold, as the metal content dictates. Rick frowned as we walked.
We're passing by the provisioner in a few minutes. Show me the coins when we get there. This kingdom hasn't minted Electrum coins since before the last Great War. The northern half of the continent hasn't used Electrum for twice as long as that.
That news surprised me. I had just assumed that they were either coins of the southern kingdoms or the northern desert folk, as Shaman had guessed. If they were contraband of some sort, they would need to be melted down first, which would take precious time and resources. Upon reaching the provisioner's shop, I handed the remaining Electrum coins to my human friend.
Aha! Rick exclaimed. This coinage is somewhat uncommon. These were minted in Castle Grey, which means they're at least a couple hundred years old. They usually trade for around 2.5 gold each. Will that cover your list?
I was relieved. I fished out the scrap of parchment that I had written out just before getting dressed this morning. I believe so. I'll take any change in silver. Thank you, my friend. With that, I waited outside. It didn't take very long. I couldn't afford anything fancy, after all. My human companion even helped me to carry the parcels back to the shop using his wonderful flat mule spell. I spent the rest of the day preparing to trade the spell knowledge that we had discussed last night. Should anything happen to me, I wanted to make sure that my new spell would live on. Whenever Rick had a chance throughout the day, he popped down to the stockroom and helped me with the translation of my notes. Rick not only spoke my native tongue, he knew the written form fairly well. That made the process much easier. The next morning, we tackled the exercise of translating a simple spell into Orcish. Painstaking would be one word for it. Painful might be more accurate. Will thought that detect magic would be a good candidate. Although I didn't understand every word on sight, the common alphabet was becoming quite intuitive to me. Still, I leaned heavily on Rick's bilingual talents, so as not to monopolize my friend's time for more than half a day. They had a shop to run, after all. When I was alone, I finished transcribing the detect magic spell into my book. After my midday nap, I even committed the minor spell to memory so that I could try it out. Of course, a magical storeroom was probably not the wisest place to do so. Everything started glowing. I shielded my eyes and hissed from the sudden brightness. Will ran down to check on me, and then started laughing uncontrollably.
Oh, good gods, Sorge, I'm sorry, I should have warned you. But yes, you've got the spell right. Why don't you take a break while this runs its course? You slept through lunch, but we saved a baked potato with chicken gravy for you, and the stove should still be warm enough to reheat it.
I slid my gloves on and walked up the stairs. As I passed through the shop, I kept my hood up, bowing my head like a monk. My amulet had a faint glow, as did I from the persistent mystical enhancements, but I was covered up head to toe.
The customers didn't take notice. The potato was simple, but the gravy was very nice. Salty, lemony, and of course, chicken-y. There were no leftovers. The next couple of days were much the same, as the full moon approached. My human friends used labels, receipts, and transcripts to help teach me the written version of common. Once I learned their system, I was even able to help restock the shop. One older elven woman asked for a consultation as to why her levitation spell wasn't working correctly. As Rick and Will didn't know that particular spell, they asked me if I would be comfortable helping her out, as she was a friend of theirs. I accepted the challenge, and we proceeded to the back garden for some herbal tea and tutoring. Although the golden-eyed elf was a friend of my companion's, and she seemed nice enough, I decided to keep my identity a secret for now. So I kept my hood up and my voice low. She seemed to be quite an advanced student, if the elf's smooth and practiced technique was any indication. It was just this spell in particular giving her problems. We walked through each gesture and intonation slowly. I saw the issue. There were just a couple of minor errors in hand positioning midway through the casting. I was able to coach her past her mistakes within an hour and a half. She seemed quite pleased afterwards, hovering 2 feet off the ground. As the old elf departed, I was assured that Rick and Will would be told how competent and friendly I was. I chuckled and wished the woman a good day. That wasn't the end of my teaching for the week. Both of the humans learned augmented intelligence flawlessly, of course. As promised, my own learning took place soon after. Invisible Shield took me the longest to master, but I eventually managed it. By comparison, I picked up Silence from Will fairly easily, and that was supposedly the more difficult spell of the two. On the final night before my trip, as we were washing and drying the dishes, I confided in my new friends. I'm glad we were able to finish trading spells before I left. Should anything happen to me, at least a piece of my magic will live on. The humans glanced at each other. Rick spoke up first. It was an honor, Sort, to create such a work of art in the middle of a swamp under those conditions. Simply incredible. And you accomplished that with, I must note, almost no resources to your name, no research staff, and a tiny library. Will chimed in. The progression from the basic version to yours is so intuitive, and both sets of notes, simple and arcane, were meticulous. You made it easy for us, truth be told. Students in the future are really going to benefit from your work. I noted that they didn't downplay the danger of my upcoming mission. They were adventurers themselves, and adventure is dangerous business. I informed the human duo. I'm going to try to be back in 4 days, maybe allow an extra day for weather. I'll be patrolling out there the night prior, the night of the full moon, and the night after. If I'm not back in 5 days, I didn't make it. In that case, could you get the bartender's friend, the orc captain, to send word to Shaman of the Jawafa clan? He would want to know. Will nodded.
We shall do so. On the brighter side, should you be successful, we'll have scouted out your potential living space near the docks. We can present you with the most privacy-oriented options on your return.
The rest of the night was spent engaging in idle chatter, making light of things, and drinking cheap hard cider. That's how adventurers put death in his place. He would come when he came, but to spend your entire life fearing him is a waste of time. Better to spend whatever time you have on Panos striving to make something of yourself, and whenever possible, do so within the company of your friends. Chapter 7. After saying goodbye to my friends the next morning, I walked out of the city's east gate. I was heading into the farmlands. My destination was near the foothills that lay a couple of days northeast of Limpt. The number of inns and shops that appeared on the side of the road dropped off rapidly after a few hours. Rather than stay on the main road, I switched over to the old cart path that ran parallel. That route kept me further away from any prying eyes. Soon I was walking past fields and copses of trees without another living soul in the vicinity. I traveled day and night, and day once again. The only oddity that I spotted was a single iron lamppost on the roadside. I spied the thing late on the first night of travel. There were no apparent structures or people in the surrounding area, and yet a fresh torch burned merrily in the post's glass-shielded sconce. I was a little disturbed, truth be told. Rather than rest nearby, I extended my travel for a half hour until the thing was well out of sight. It seemed like an eternity before I saw any signs of civilization again. Only at noon on the second day did I pass a simple fruit stand. Soon after, I came upon a small community surrounding the local wheat mill. Most of the farmers that I passed had a grim look on their weathered faces. As I crouched by the stream in order to refill my water skins, I overheard two of the humans talking about the changes that were befalling their lands. The pudgy farmer with the low-pitched voice had been saying,
"This water was swelling past the banks 10 years ago. Now the current barely turns the mill's water wheel. What in the hell's happened?"
The farmer with filthy overalls replied,
"Same thing's happening all over. Crops getting more brown, chickens laying less eggs. It's the end times, maybe, says my preacher."
The pudgy one snorted and cast a quick sidelong gaze at my cloaked figure to see if I shared his derision.
"Might be the end for us, but I don't think it's that. I think it's targeted. I think some of those new god folk want to drive us out, and they prayed for this."
Overalls shrugged slowly.
"It may be that the end of days is about old gods fighting new gods, and in the fighting they forget about us. That's why the brown and the water issues and more sickness, they got their eyes elsewhere."
Pudgy just sighed. He turned to look down at where I was crouching.
"If you're hunting the lids around here, you're probably in for a bad time."
I shook my cloaked head. As I tied the water skins to my belt and rose to my feet, I replied to the farmer using a soft voice. "No, I'm here to maybe fix at least one of these hardships. I'm hunting a poacher, said to be taking sheep from around these parts." Pudgy's eyes widened.
"Well, good on you. I heard about all that."
Overalls piped in.
"Godspeed to you, young man. Last place is here with just northeast of here. Keep the river on your left till you see pinewood fences. Find the bastard and break him in two."
I nodded. "Thanks. Fair travels," was my reply. It was a useful bit of intel and a decent place to start. The farms in this area were nearly identical. They grew simple things, such as potatoes and carrots, and nearly all of them kept large flocks of sheep. Sheep could be sheared for the wool, and eventually turned into mutton in their older years. After speaking to a couple of locals, I knew I was in the right place. They were angry, and more than happy to share what information they had to help catch the sheep rustler. Within an hour, I knew every farm that had been hit during the last full moon. The poacher had been targeting younger adult sheep, likely because they were lighter weight and less experienced in evasion than their older kin. While there was still light, I scoured the low foothills nearby the last couple of thefts. There was no physical sign of disturbance. I went to two of the more easily traveled routes through the foothills and tried to detect any magic in the area. Nothing. As the sun died, I mounted the tallest of the foothills in the area and dug in for the night. There would be no fire tonight to keep me warm. Fire would give away my location and either scare off the poacher or worse, make me a target. My cloak would be my mattress, and my new traveling blanket the cocoon that kept the night air at bay. I primarily watched a particular farm. This farm hadn't been hit yet, if the locals were to be believed. A section of fence on the farm's back acre was in disrepair. There seemed to be little or no sign of guard or herding dogs on the property. In short, it was a tasty target. The bulk of the night passed without incident. I was able to make note of grazing patterns, herd behavior, and the like. In the final hour of moonlight, just as I was about to take out my rations for a cold dinner of dry fruit, something moved in the hills below me. I schooled my breathing and held perfectly still. The figure was distant. I could see that it was watching the same farm that I was. It stalked with an eerie precision that denoted at least some intelligence above that of an animal. It acted like something at the top of the food chain, indicated by the fact that it was far more focused on its prey than on looking for tricks or ambushes. This was